is for World of Work podcast with James
and Jane.
Hi, this is James. I wanted to let you know that as well as these podcasts, we deliver at least one free online seminar every month that you're welcome to attend wherever you are in the world. You can learn more about them and register for them via our website, www.worldofwork.io. That's www.worldofwork.io.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the World of Work podcast. As always, we are here bringing you a conversation to help you think about workplaces and your role in them. And today I'm really, really excited. We've got a guest with us who I connected with on social media. I know, look at us being all modern. Because there was a bit of a discussion going on and we have hit some challenges around our culture work and doing it really well. I had asked some questions of people saying, oh, who should I talk to? And I got very, very firmly pointed in this person's direction. So I'm really excited to have you to actually talk about this because our conversation, even before we talked about the podcast, was really interesting and helpful for me. So with no further ado, this is Letitia Gibson, founder of New Ways. Letitia, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
It would be really great in true World of Work tradition if you could just introduce yourself to the World of Work audience and maybe tell them a little bit about you and your work.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I'm the founder of New Ways. New Ways is a behaviour change consultancy. We have been going since about 2020. So I'll tell you a little about how we arrived at that, but maybe it might be quite helpful to just have a little bit more of a flavour of kind of how I ended up here. Really varied career, actually. So I spent about 15 years working in research, brand strategy, innovation and trends. And about 7 years ago, I had a burnout. So that really was a result of kind of very dysfunctional and toxic kind of culture. And it really kind of honed my attention to be away from thinking about brands and organizations were doing externally, to be thinking about actually what's happening inside an organization, thinking about leadership and culture. And I've been on that journey kind of ever since. And I think when George Floyd's murder happened, that really became quite a focusing moment for me for thinking about, actually, I've been looking at kind of visions and values and purpose and thinking about how we really kind of build the foundations, if you like, for a stronger culture. But here is actually something we're really missing and we're really not thinking enough about. So I really, that's when I launched New Ways. And we firstly focused a lot on kind of supporting leaders to build anti-racist cultures. And as that journey has gone on, we really work kind of a little bit more broadly, looking at how you can build a progressive, inclusive and anti-racist organization where everybody belongs. And belonging is obviously a big theme of what I'm going to talk about today. But the way that we do that as we work, go in and sort of provide kind of culture audits, really understand kind of where people are at, help them work out what kind of an organization do they want to be, and then support leaders and their teams to go on journeys of learning and unlearning to really make that culture and that workplace really, you know, live that vision.
Okay, I've already got more things than I had on my original list just from that introduction. And I definitely think if we get time, I'd love to come back to the idea of unlearning because I think it's such an amazingly important part of culture work. But today, as you mentioned, and you kind of given a little trailer there, we're going to be talking about modern belonging in the workplace. And this is a phrase that I came across through you. So the phrase of modern belonging. And I guess a really good starting point would be to just understand a little bit about what you mean by modern belonging and whether that's like a well-known phrase. And is that what everyone means when they're talking about belonging?
Yeah, so modern belonging, I think, is my invention. It's really just to kind of acknowledge that we are in a different time. I mean, I think we can't really talk about belonging without kind of thinking about the broader context of kind of what's been happening in the world, but also in the world of work over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. And, you know, if we just look back over the last 3 or 4 years, like it's been quite an intense period of change for lots of people in lots of different ways. And I think it's the kind of coming together of all of those forces that really creates a need to think about modern belonging. So, you know, if we firstly sort of take, you know, COVID, the impact that had on people reflecting on actually, what is it that I want from work and is working for me? So that kind of, there was that phrase, wasn't there? The great realization of people really starting to think about, am I really aligned with my values in the work that I'm doing? So I think that's one of the first things that feels like it's really important to kind of connect to. And then obviously I mentioned George Floyd's murder, which actually was a moment when we were all on pause in the world. That has really shone a light on actually the way that racism is at play in our society and in our workplaces. But it also opened the questions around actually what about all the other isms, and actually this kind of broader focus on EDI, and actually that really started to sort of shift what people might be looking for or needing. It kind of broadened our understanding of where people are at. I think the hybrid and remote working is another sort of lens of things that have really shifted things. People are actually connecting in a more transactional way around work. So, you know, we're seeing people being a bit more disconnected or feeling a little bit more distant from colleagues, from purposes, from missions of organizations. So that's obviously something that's kind of impacting on a sense of belonging. And then can't really talk about belonging without really kind of talking about the world we're in today, what's going on in Israel and Gaza and the Congo and Sudan as one lens, our feelings about democracy and, yeah, the failings of that, the cost of living crisis in the UK. I know, and we put all of those together. People aren't okay, actually. People are really feeling like they can't express themselves in some situations and maybe feeling overwhelmed by the kind of impact of those things. So I think when we think about modern belonging, we have to kind of think about that kind of bigger context, because what that's done is it started to create some different expectations of what we might want from our workplaces, what we might be expecting from our leaders, what we want our experience of work to look like. And whether those expectations are a mess or not, it sort of has an impact, right? People make a choice as to whether this is a place to be invested in. Are these people that I can trust? Do I feel kind of aligned to myself here? And those are all things that impact on belonging. So I know that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. And that's why we kind of thought about this space of modern belonging, because it felt like the way that we were thinking about it previous to that was potentially a little bit one-dimensional, particularly when we think about looking at this in the workplace. And now there's so much more interplay with what's going on in the outside world with actually how workplaces need to respond and kind of evolve, that we felt that it was worthy of starting to think about more layered, shall we say, like definition of belonging.
And when you put it into context like that, and I'm in my late 40s, so I've been in the workplace for a while now. I started quite early. And you list out all of the ways that we're experiencing an external dynamic context, which is, I guess, a fancy way of it saying a turbulent world. I don't ever remember a period, and maybe that's because I was born just after sort of the last political turbulence in the UK in the sort of late 70s, but I don't remember a time in my career pre 2017 where the world played such, like the external world played such a role in how we feel about work, how we conduct work, and that really complex, messy sort of changing of the political environment, as well as COVID and lockdowns and the changing, as well as technology. Like, it's extraordinary when you think about it, how much it almost makes you think we have to rip up. We have to totally rethink a lot of how we create meaningful relationships, teams, all of that at work, because it's just a different world. It's, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but it's such a different world from where we were. And people are experiencing it so, so differently in the way that it turns up. So yeah, it makes really good sense, that idea of a modern sense of belonging. I just want to ask you a little bit about motivations, because you sort of gave us a little flavor when you did your introduction, but this is clearly really important work. And it's clear from what you've just described that there's an obvious specific area that needs organizations working in it. But what is it about this work that is so important to you and your organization? Why this?
Well, belonging is something like, I mean, belonging matters to everyone, right? I mean, we all know what it feels like, and it is a feeling, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we all know what it feels like to belong. It's something that is quite visceral, quite fundamental to our sense of well-being. When I think about my own kind of lived experience as a mixed race, working class woman, I've often been in spaces where I didn't belong. And I grew up in the 80s, right? So like, that was a very different time, actually, for thinking about kind of a sense of belonging in society and in all different kinds of spaces. But I think what's kind of unique about my experience is that I was always sort of in the third space. So not black enough, not white enough to fit into either of those groups. As I went to university, I wasn't working class enough to fit into my kind of home kind of community. I wasn't middle class enough to fit into other spaces. As a brown woman, I didn't have the right kind of femininity to be the right kind of feminine. So I've actually been quite fascinated by the being in the third space and sort of feeling like you don't quite belong in different places. And actually our organization feels like it's a magnet for those kinds of associates that we work with that see themselves also being in third spaces. But that is kind of fundamentally why I kind of think about belonging as being important to me. But also, like, the work that we do, I mean, my very first proper job, if we say, my kind of job after uni, I was really lucky to land on my feet in an organization that was very diverse and that really instinctively was very inclusive and actually was way ahead of their time. And I didn't really appreciate that at the time, that I was in this sort of a very special company that was in a sector that was incredibly white, incredibly middle class. And the sense of belonging that I felt there and the way that that I had role models around me, I had people who championed my development and my growth and really kind of helped me find my place. And it wasn't until I left there that I realized that actually that wasn't, it was like elsewhere, and went into kind of different environments where I really would never have belonged. I mean, I mentioned the burnout that I had and I was a senior leader in that role. But I was in an organization that I would have never have belonged to. And I kind of put a lot of energy into trying to fit in and trying to do well, but it was just never going to happen. So that really kind of focused me on thinking about how important and what I personally could bring to this space of belonging. And I think my fascination with trends and new things and like innovation has always sort of stuck with me. So I'm always really curious about, as you talk about ripping up the rule book and thinking about what is it, what kind of organization do we need to be in the world today? Like, that's also quite a driver for me as well. And I'll share some thoughts a little later on, but actually I really do very strongly believe that there is a need to evolve that organization to where people are at today. And that's also a big part of why we do what we do.
Yeah, I'll share with the listeners because they know quite a lot about what James, the kind of work James and I do. And one of the things we've seen specifically around this topic is scaling organizations that had incredibly tight senses of belonging in the smaller origin, what we call origin state. So like people were close enough to the beginning of the journey of the organization that they feel like they belong to, that's found, not the founders, but the founding group, the founding environment. I was here from the beginning. And then as they grow, the organization has to totally rethink what it means to belong to that organization, because otherwise you just end up with cliques. You end up with cliques and splits across the organization. So listening to you talk about what motivates and this idea of how do we rethink what people need and want from a workplace so that we can have good organized, look, you know, I want every organization to be successful. It's not that we're, and I think sometimes that gets misunderstood. People are like, oh, organizations can't all be perfect for everyone. They don't have to be perfect for everyone, but you do need to find ways to create meaning and purpose and connection within the teams, within the context of work appropriately, so that people can do their best work. And, you know, the evidence is out there around how we do our best work is when we don't have to do a whole load of emotional labor contorting ourselves into like different places and spaces to fit. And I think, yeah, so it's really lovely to hear you talk about that. And I already secretly will now want to be in your organization because that sounds like a group that I would want to belong to. So we're kind of touching on the fact that this is not straightforward. And by very nature of the fact, generally we believe here at the podcast that most people are good people and they want to do better. They don't necessarily know how, they don't do it well, but they're not, people aren't actively seeking to create poor environments. Yet despite this, we know that not everyone's experiencing belonging and that this idea of creating modern belonging is much tougher than it looks. How widespread is the challenge? Like, where are you seeing it? What are your thoughts about what you're seeing out there in terms of sort of prevalence?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're seeing more and more of it, if I'm honest. And I think there is something about that kind of old model of work and people being in a new space, but the organizations might not have caught up, is a little bit, yeah, it's a sort of a tension there. And that probably is some of where senses of not belonging are happening. I mean, we obviously we have the privilege of kind of seeing lots of moments of belonging and not belonging in quite granular ways through, you know, conversations that we have with team members all of the time. And, you know, the thing is with not belonging is that it doesn't mean that you don't like your job. it doesn't mean that you don't like your colleagues. Like it isn't kind of everything's like awful and terrible within a company, but it can mean that on one surface, it can look like everything's going okay, but actually internally, people are feeling unsafe, unseen, unheard, undervalued. Maybe there's kind of a growing sense of them not believing in leadership or losing faith with what it is that we're doing or what the direction that we're going in. Maybe there's some disconnect with, like, I don't actually know if we share the same values anymore or if it's kind of like who I want to be aligned with. And it can sort of end up with people feeling quite isolated. And so they're kind of not then sort of sharing, they don't feel kind of able to sort of share how they're feeling in the world right now, or things are sort of happening under the surface that leadership or even maybe colleagues aren't really aware of. And they might have lost trust in kind of efforts around, particularly, you know, we do a lot around EDI. Has anything changed? And does anyone care about that? So it can be quite sort of things that are kind of internally having an impact on someone. And I don't know if this is sort of a moment to sort of talk about the sort of deep dive we've been having in thinking about modern belonging, because it's quite a big thing. And over the last sort of 6 months, we've been really doing a lot of research, having a lot of conversations with our associates and people we connect with through our work about what does belonging today look like? And even from beginning that journey, I mean, just thinking about what's sort of been happening recently in the last 3 months, you really start to see, wow, this is something that feels really important to get right. Because I'm sure maybe you've heard from through other guests or through your work, just that sort of sense of kind of silencing or the lack of safety that people are feeling to speak up right now in workplaces around kind of issues that are happening on the world stage, but how that sort of seeping into a general sense of it's not safe to speak about things. So belonging feels like, yeah, like a really important thing to get right now, because I think we're at a little bit of a point of a risk of really tipping over into more people not belonging. But we've been thinking about there being kind of a number of different lenses of this. And I think safety is a big one. We talk about psychological safety, but that can be context specific. So does that really connect to me and my identity? Does that connect to talking about difficult things? Like, do I really feel safe here? So is it safe to be me? I think it also is about kind of agency and empowerment. See how much control have people got over their workspace environments, the experience of work? Do they believe in the mission? Am I here for the mission? Do I really have a sense of like what we stand for anymore? That feels really important. And that's actually harder to stay connected to when we're in remote worlds. I mean, some people are joining remotely and it might be a year before they even meet colleagues or leaders. And that sort of connects to the next area, which is around real connection. Like actually, if we don't know each other, it's quite hard to foster a sense of belonging, right? Because we can't do belonging from a distance, like emotional distance and maybe even physical distance. And I think people are really caring about, you know, being seen. Like, am I supported? Am I heard? Do people understand me? You know, are my needs being met for me as an individual? And I think increasingly we see belonging really being connected to trust in the journey of EDI or anti-racism or diversity and inclusion, or you know, whatever kind of phrase you want to put around that. And that isn't necessarily kind of, you know, supercharging ahead and being amazing at that, but trusting it's important to us, we care about it, and I can see that there's efforts and impacts resulting from that. So yeah, it's been interesting to sort of, I have to acknowledge that actually there are quite a few layers to this, and actually what might be a challenge for one organization might not be the same for another. So actually really being able to understand what does belonging and not belonging look like in your organization feels like quite an important thing for us to kind of get our heads around, you know, rather than simply just like saying, yeah, people say they belong here, tick, off we go. Actually, it's more nuanced and more integral into actually thinking about how we lead and how we run our organizations.
There's so much to unpick in that, but there's one thing I just want to share because it just, I don't know, reminded me of something. We have a quote that we use in quite a lot of our training material around building trust. And it's from a clinical psychologist called Peter Fonagay from a radio series we were listening to. It's really frustrating because it's not written down in the book anywhere. And I'd love to be able to plaster it everywhere, but it's one of those things that I heard on audio. And he talked about being understood, being at the very core of our species as humans. And this idea that when we're truly understood, and we're still welcome in a space, then we feel like that can give us one, that's one element of massively feeling like we belong, because it's like everyone says, hey, I see all of you and you're still here and I'm not throwing you out. And I'm not, and it's that thing of why do we, you know, ultimately a lack of psychological safety is a fear, right? It's a fear of rejection. And so this idea that you can truly get to know someone and connect with someone, truly understand and see who they are, and still be like, yep, you're still one of us, is really, really, really important. And it's particularly important, I think, for some people. So I think particularly if you've had, it's important for all of us, but I think some of us are more sensitive to it, I might say, depending if we've had experience of it in the past. So, and this is one of the things we talk to managers a lot about. Like, you don't know someone's track history. You might know the story they choose to tell you, but you don't know what they think is normal in a workplace because you weren't in their previous workplaces. So you have to give them that space and kind of very proactively seek out that opportunity to create space for them to feel understood and to share as much as they want. And I think it just struck me as you were talking through all the sort of different sort of variables, how tough this challenge is for managers who are also overstretched, undertrained. There's loads of data out at the moment that 80% of managers never intended to be. They just got given a job with no training. And so it makes it really hard, and it makes the issue kind of everywhere. If you think about how much you were just describing has to work for this to be effective, there's lots and lots of challenges in there. But I'm also interested in, like, there are people who, and there are teams who are finding their way through this. You're clearly working with organizations that are championing it. And we know that one of the elements, fundamental sort of influences on culture change, is leader attention, right? Where are leaders spending their time and attention? So there are people doing it and trying. What sort of impact are you seeing on those organizations? What changes when you see organizations that are creating with their people meaningful experiences of modern belonging?
Yeah, well, I think people really feel belonging in those organizations. I mean, I've had leaders share with me that people have come to them and said, this is one of the first places that I really feel I belong in. So it really is a kind of a noticeable difference. I think those cultures are able to kind of relationships where people can be more open. There's more transparency. There's a lot of listening that happens. There's, I think, that kind of conventional, maybe outdated idea of, like, you come to work and you just put your work me on. In those organizations, there's a little bit of a step between personal me and work me that have come together. You know, they've both taken a step forward. And so it allows for kind of more authentic connections and relationships. I think they're able to navigate through conflict differently because there isn't this sort of there's a sort of an underlying trust that we can figure things out, that I really know who you are. And yeah, people feel really like they can bring themselves to work in the way that they want. And I think what you referenced earlier about fitting in feels really important. And I'm always sort of struck by Brené Brown's research. I don't know if you've seen that sort of clip where she said the opposite of belonging is fitting in. You know, fitting in is contorting yourself and assimilating and adapting. And actually, that's so exhausting and actually really isn't how any of us really want to kind of bring ourselves to workplaces. So in these spaces, it is that sense of, yeah, I don't have to think about who I am, and I can just come and do the work and bring my talents, my strengths to the team. So I think those are some of the things that you see in organizations that have it.
I love that clip, that speech from Brené Brown. We'll put a link to it as well, because it's one of those things that stops you in your tracks because you've never really done enough thinking about it. And then the minute you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, no, that makes total sense. You know, this idea that if you don't have belonging, then the chances are if you're in a group, you can either leave the group. But if you're there and present in the way we are at work, it's not like a friendship group. You can't leave and still do your job. Then you have to find a way to fit. And that labor is exhausting for any of you listening who ever have to do any of that work around your family. And lots of us do. We navigate our relationships with our parents and our siblings and quite often have to be a little careful about certain things. If you're doing that all day and trying to do a job, you're not spending all your best efforts on the job. It's as simple as that. And I also think there's a lovely piece in Amy Edmondson's work in Phyllis Organization where she talks about that if you have a team that individually are all experiencing a feeling like they feel included, which is some of the terminology she uses around it. She's like, the information sharing goes through the roof because there's never a concern about what someone's going to think of me for bringing a different source in or a different place or a question or a, I think on a very simple level, it feels like a place I'd want to work. I like, that feels like something that would be important to me if I was going to go and sit through however many hundreds of interviews people have to do these days to get a job. I'd want to know there's some of that waiting on the other end, or at least understand how people are trying to create it, I think. Is it the same for everyone? Like, do people experience it, do you think, in the same way? And I guess, more importantly, do the same things get in the way for everybody, or is it different for different people?
So I think the experience of belonging, like the feeling of what it feels like to belong or not belong, are pretty consistent. So, we run an exercise actually at the start of some of our workshops, which actually takes people on a visualization to go back to a time when they belonged and didn't belong. And irrespective of background, level, job, it's always the same things. Actually, the impact of like not belonging is, we kind of underestimate what a big impact that is, not just the emotional labor, but I think it's also the uncertainty, you feel the self-doubt, the isolation, the questioning, the lack of confidence, the unwillingness to take risks. So that all is the same, actually, and actually can have quite a big impact on people's well-being, as you'd imagine, experiencing that at work. But I think what's different is that some people don't expect to belong in the same way. And yeah, there was an interview yesterday, wasn't there, with Jeremy Harris, the playwright, talking about his London play. And he talked about radical inclusion. And I think there are, and how important it is to be kind of radically invited into some spaces. So I think that's true of workplaces, right? There are some sectors that feel maybe very white, maybe very male, maybe very middle class, or any other kind of identity characteristic, which means that if you're not those things, there might be a lower expectation of belonging here. And so, yeah, they're sort of dealing with that and thinking about what that means. And we've definitely seen through our work people talking about changing their accent to sound less, to sound more like received pronunciation, or people hiding ADHD or autism diagnoses because they don't feel like that's going to, they're not going to be accepted bringing that here. And we hear through our kind of work on anti-racism, people talking about not feeling like leadership is a space that I should be in or could belong in. We hear that about boardrooms. One really sticks out in my mind about someone sharing that they were on a board and there was like quite a number of global majority colleagues, but still there was this sense that I don't really fit in here and I shouldn't be here. And can I ask questions and can I put my ideas forward? So I think that has quite a big impact on belonging and feels like quite sort of important to really understand that these experiences are different. And I think when we think about this sort of marginalized groups of all identities, when they see an organization prioritizing belonging or they hear about it through whatever communications, it becomes such an appealing place to go and work because that expectation for it elsewhere is so low.
Yeah, it's interesting. And there's like three or four things popping out in my mind that listeners might be interested in. One is, we recorded an episode a couple of years ago with a researcher on class in the heritage and museum sector. And that is it's a really good listen if anyone wants to go back and listen to that, because she talks through some of, like, it was, she collected quite a lot of data from people experiencing it. And so she had some really interesting sort of perspectives. But also, I think when you talk about, like, one of the things I always remember is I was chatting to a boss of mine many years ago, really good guy, really good guy. And he was asking me about why we had a couple of new starters who were early career. And he was asking me about why I kind of had harked on about my partner. I mean, those of you listening, I'm in a same-sex relationship. Like, harked on about my partner very specifically on day one, And he was like, I never understand. You don't do it the rest of the time. Like, it doesn't bother me, but I'm curious. And I said, because we have to make a statement because it's not visible in the office, whether that's welcome or not, and whether that's a good thing. And so it's just really easy if I can slip it in and then you, I know, will ask me about how she's doing and stuff like that. And we normalize it. And he was like, but why would they think it wouldn't be? And that was the moment where I was like, And this is when these feelings aren't based on something irrational. This is often based on actual experience, right? And that's, I think, the bit that's really important for people to understand. It's harder for some people to trust that an environment is going to welcome them and is going to be theirs and a place where they can belong, because they've been places where they haven't. And I think sometimes that bit gets left behind, because if you're fundamentally surrounded by basically good people, they may not have been in those environments, because they're like, well, I'm the majority in this particular scenario, and everyone I think here is a good person, and there doesn't seem to be an issue, so what should I worry about? So I guess I just wanted to sort of spell out that for a lot of people, just because you haven't seen or been in environments where that's not welcome, doesn't mean the person that you're welcoming or bringing into an organization hasn't. And that it's probably based on quite a rational understanding of where they've been and what they've experienced. And there, for those of you also listening, we're recording this in the UK, and literally, I think yesterday, there's been some interesting stuff going on in the West End, which is our version of sort of New York's Broadway, about a playwright and this idea of having performances for the Black community. And so I'll see if I can dig out a link to the BBC article on it as well, because it's really interesting. That phrase of radical inviting, that's what stuck with me as well. What do you think, when you work with organizations, they're trying to do the work, what's getting in the way? Like, they mean well, what slows them down or what stops it happening?
So I think one of the things is thinking that belonging is a nice to have.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's the icing on the cake. It's the thing that we do when business as usual is all going well. And as we know, business as usual is pretty challenged in many sectors right now.
Feels like it's never going well at the moment.
But I think, yeah, not really understanding kind of how fundamentally it affects how people not only experience work, but actually do the work. So there is a commercial kind of connection to performance and effectiveness. So I think that seeing it as a kind of pink and fluffy thing, that's like a nice thing, as opposed to kind of fundamental to people's motivation and performance. I think that's one of the things, making it not a priority always. I think one of the other things that I'm seeing more and more is knowing how your people are feeling. Like, maybe we might have an engagement survey that might run once a year or some kind of pulse every 6 months. But because of the nature of work and because of people being overstretched and having less contact to have those kind of informal conversations, there does feel like things can be brewing without us knowing. So I think really not having a sense of how well people are feeling belonging right now is one of the things that gets in the way of getting it right. I think you sort of talked about the differences of experiences. And I think one of the other kind of watch outs is assuming that because you belong here, everyone else does. And that can obviously happen, particularly if we're, you know, leading in some way, where, and we sort of forget that, like, we're privileged with all the information about where we're going as an organization and what we care about. And somebody further out in the organization just hasn't got any of that sight. So I think that just acknowledging that there will be multiple experiences of belonging and almost sort of anticipating that, but not seeing that is often the thing. But then it's like, I think, kind of more practical things like poor communication, like actually just people not really knowing what's going on and they're filling in the gaps, and that's sort of creating a distance from each other, or misunderstandings or miscommunication about, yeah, what we care about, what our values are, and that sense of not really feeling that connected to who we are as an organization. So, yeah, and I think I touched on earlier just the kind of more transactional nature of work. I mean, I think that's one of the things I hear most often when I'm working with teams about what they want to change. When we talk about belonging, they're like, we want more time together. We want to have more informal ways of gathering that's not just about specific kind of project work. So I think it feels like there's some kind of small wins in there, I have to say. I think some things are, it might be a complex and layered topic, modern belonging, but actually creating belonging can actually be quite a simple act. So I think it's a combination of smaller things, bigger things, behavioral things, structural things, but there's some very simple wins.
I was chatting to a CEO the other day who, it would not be nearly as articulate as you are about what he's trying to do, but is definitely aware that this world has changed how, he's been CEO for about 9 years, and he definitely is aware that it's changed the way people experience the workplace and each other. And he's got a list of all his teams. They're not a huge organization, it's about 400 of them. Any major thing that happens, he makes sure that every team hears directly from him on that topic within a month. Now, it's not quick. He's like, I can't do it all at once. I've got too many things to do. And sometimes that's just because they've been on big organization team meeting. And sometimes it's because he's popped into their team meeting. And sometimes it's because he's spoken to one of them and asked them to pass it on. But he said the difference in the systemic approach to it versus just catching people when he saw them and realizing that there were whole teams he was never seeing and they were just feeling slowly and slowly out of it. So the example that he gave me was like they've got an accounts team and they're a very dynamic organization delivering a product, right? They're not the accounts team of off doing something in their own houses. And he just realized they were like, they were different personalities, different people, different backgrounds, different experiences. And then they weren't part of the bigger picture. So I really loved that. And he's literally got, he showed me, he's like literally just got the initials of the teams and then a tick list. And then he just ticks them off every month and then rips it up and does it again. And I was like, I really admired that. I was like, that is so simple and such a lovely way on one level of keeping them engaged with the business and how they're getting on. So this is the point where we ask a lot of our guests this question. It's one of my favorites. What would you like to be different?
So I'm a real fan of Frederic Laloux's Reinventing Organizations, which maybe you've talked about at some stage.
We have actually a little bit a while ago, but we have, and I will link to it.
So that would be a great link to share because I think just briefly, he did a big piece of research kind of classifying different kinds of organizations and create this little pyramid with different kind of colors for each layer. And at the top of the pyramid, what he calls a teal organization. Mm. And that's what I believe in actually, which is organizations that are led by a very strong, shared and clear vision of who they want to be and what they want to achieve in the world, but then actually give quite a lot of autonomy, but also responsibility to people to help them achieve that vision in a way that feels aligned to who they are, what their motivations are, yeah, and what they care about. And I think there's a lot we can take from that for thinking about the world today and what people are looking for and how to kind of help us kind of grow and move forward as organizations. So I think as a kind of foundation for thinking about workplace belonging feels quite strong to me. We all believe in the vision. And then I actually have agency and can feel empowered to how I can help the company move forward. And there's a real sense of investment in that. But on top of that, I think it really is about being better listeners as organizations. I think we've really sort of lost touch with that. And I think maybe that's even myself looking back with rose-tinted glasses, because did we ever really listen that well when we were in office environments to everybody? But there's something about becoming really skilled at listening to each other and being able to kind of hear all the voices and hear the different perspectives, you know, in the context of having different lived experience. Because without that, we can't really have respect and care, actually. And I think care is another thing that we can say we care, but it's like in those small moments, right, that we create those sort of micro moments of belonging and connection. So some of those kind of principles feel like really important. But connected to that is also sort of being able to be transparent. So that is a little bit talking about communication, but it's also talking about being very open and actually being able to kind of have tricky conversations about messy topics, being courageous and not just being kind of in the nice, we're nice people space, but actually being willing to kind of get into some of those issues to find solutions together. And obviously with some vulnerability, and that creates trust in itself and a sense of belonging because we're able to kind of work through things rather than kind of skirting around them. So I think for me, and that obviously needs a particular leadership kind of mindset. It needs a culture that's kind of invested in learning and unlearning, as we talked about, so that we've got the cultural kind of intelligence, shall we say, to navigate the world today, but the emotional intelligence also to be able to kind of bring ourselves in a sort of adult to adult kind of dynamic. So I think it's really about us acknowledging that we're people, right? And all the people-y things like are really important right now in order that we can grow as professionals and can really have an impact as an organization. And it's just going back to that.
Really brilliant. Lots and lots and lots of useful things in there that people can absolutely start thinking about, I think, as leaders of organizations and indeed people in organizations in positions of influence. I think there's we always talk about the idea of narrating your leadership. Like, let people know it's okay if you're not there yet, but let people know the journey you want to go on with this, because that will A, buy you a bit more time, because they'll be like, okay, the intent's right. And also they'll help, right? They'll get on board and they'll be able to support you when you don't necessarily have all the answers straight away. It's a difficult question, but do you think there's things that people can do? So maybe people are in bigger organizations, have less visibility of what's going on, like at top level. They know the organization kind of cares, but they also know it's not working. Is there anything that they can do in their teams or for the people around them that maybe they would contribute to sort of at least their immediate peers' experience of it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think, I mean, when I go into organizations and run belonging workshops, I do sometimes get a sense that people think belonging is going to happen to them, kind of like magically, that somehow leaders are going to do something and then they're going to really experience something different. And there's sort of an awakening that they have in the workshop, which is like, oh, it actually means that I have to do something different to create this sense of belonging for us. And as there's sort of that shift of thinking that belonging happens to us to belonging happens because of us. So actually everyone can do something to help with this. And in a way, that is a really helpful mindset to have in any organization. You know, I talked about the kind of adult to adult. Yeah, we all sort of need to do something a bit different, because it's all about how we're interacting and relating to each other. And I think improving a sense of belonging in a one-to-one dynamic is as important as it kind of happening on scale, and perhaps even more so, because those are people we're interacting with every day and having quite a big impact on each other's experience of work too. And so I think when I mentioned earlier about this sort of the work me and the personal me needing to sort of take a step forward together, I think that is what it is. It's about moving beyond, you know, how are you doing today? I'm fine. And then we move on, when actually that's a bit of a missed opportunity to say, actually, I'm not fine. Actually, this is going on, or I'm struggling with this. And it kind of creates an opportunity to really deepen that relationship and connect. And that's a big part of kind of building that safety and that sense of belonging. So it's about reaching out and showing that we care and getting to know each other. I mean, these are the simple things of belonging, actually.
So true. I was watching TV the other day, and it was a US dating show. And I'm sure our listeners will shout at me for not knowing the name of it, because they'll be like, oh, it's this. But it was particularly focused on neurodiverse individuals. And some of them were having a bit of coaching to help them have conversations. So there was one particularly young autistic, young woman. And she had this autism coach who was identified as autistic, and was teaching her the to's and fro's of a conversation to keep it going. Really simple stuff, but just this idea of how do you contribute to a conversation? It doesn't even have to be a question, but how do you leave the door open always for it to be a to and fro so that it doesn't finish? And that's the whole point of the activity. And as I was watching it, it struck me how often I have control over my own time, so let alone other people, how often I enter conversations in a workplace to close them. Like, in a nice way, I'm like, how fast can I get out of this conversation and move on to what I'm doing, while also letting the person know that I'm happy that they checked in? And that's just not a helpful mindset. Like, it's just really struck me as you're talking it through. I'm like, well, that's not me doing that bit then, is it, at all? Because what I'm really doing is not leaving a door open, not leaving an invitation to say, come and join me this conversation if you've got time, and let's explore it together. So there you go, listeners, that's one for me to take on the chin today, because it definitely struck me as you were saying that. So I guess we're running a little bit on time, but I'm letting it go a little long because it's such an interesting topic and such a great conversation to hear from you. So I guess, what would your advice be? Like, there are people, so we're really lucky on the podcast. We have listeners who care about this stuff, right? But they also often, we hear from them, they're like, yeah, I want to, but I don't know how, I don't know what, or I'm getting it wrong. What would your big advice be to, so we have particularly a large number of senior leaders in smaller organizations who maybe don't have HR teams. So they maybe don't have, or they don't have the budget. What would your advice to them be?
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it?
It is, and it's okay if you've only got a starting place.
Yeah, I have got a few thoughts on that. I think, I don't know if it's really just a thing that's on my mind a lot at the moment, but I do think listening to people, really listening to your people, feels like an easy thing that we can do, and is opening the door to really understanding people's different experiences. So I think doing more of that feels really helpful. I'm sort of being ready to hear people maybe not feeling great about their sense of belonging for whatever reasons, and sort of approaching that with some curiosity, because obviously the clues are going to start to emerge as to what we need to do to kind of shift that. So listening would be my first big one. I think like that, focusing on communication and kind of making sure that we've got plenty of opportunities to have dialogue about who we are, where we're going, why we're doing things, like what we care about. Like I think the need to kind of restate that and also invite conversation around that feels really important right now. I think that in itself will start to engender different feelings about I belong here that we're perhaps overlooking actually, and just assuming that they're happening and they're here, and so they must all be kind of aligned with us. I think there's something about right now bringing more humanity. So I love what you shared about that example of the CEO going and actually making time to kind of speak to everybody. You know, that feels like a very human experience. But I think, I mean, this week it's been a very tough world for news and events, particularly in Gaza. And just acknowledging some of those things and the effect that it might be having on people's well-being, moments like that, I think, can be really poignant in really strengthening a sense of belonging. And one thing, the final thing I think is thinking about opportunities to bring people together. And I know in this kind of new hybrid remote world, if that is kind of worlds they're in, we can get a bit lost in not seeing the sense of disconnection that people are feeling and not maybe appreciating the real value that they might get even from coming together. And I mean, I'm not talking about a pub social because, you know, that's not especially inclusive for everybody. But meaningful ways of kind of coming together that actually sort of like kind of strengthen those bonds and give us more of an opportunity to kind of, yeah, know each other. Now, I know those things all sound like very soft things, and they are, and that feels important. And of course, there are kind of structural things that we can do that enable belonging too and feel important, how we might recognize or how we might talk about diversity, for example, like, and actually really appreciating all of the diversity we've got within an organization. That feels like really important. You know, what's our kind of internal comms around that? How do we talk about different events that are happening? Yeah, so I think it's kind of a combination between some of those more kind of human-centric things, but also having some of that belonging baked in to the way that we do things, like our rituals and how we come together. Yeah, I think it's those two things.
Yeah, and I think one of my reflections as I moved through management and got maybe, I don't know, a little bit more humble about what I did and didn't know, was that every time someone joined a team, we had to recreate from scratch some of those rituals, because otherwise, no matter who they were, they wouldn't feel like they belong, because they would be the person who came after we started doing things. And it became a bit of a thing where we would ask people, once they'd settled in, we'd have like, okay, let's look at how we work as a team and what we could do differently. And sometimes it was too early for them to have any opinion, but it didn't matter because they were part of that process and they knew that process would change again and again and again. And I think it stops people getting too entrenched in one particular perspective of a team. And I think that can sometimes be a real barrier. No, people don't mean to. They love their work and they love who they work with. And then someone else joins and they forget, I think, sometimes how that can just feel so isolating in that moment. So yeah, I think there's lots of very, very good advice there about things like rituals and some of the more structural stuff we do, as well as the soft skills. Okay, well, that brings us really sadly to the end of this conversation. I feel like we've only really scratched the surface. I have a whole load of questions about unlearning that we didn't even have time to cover. But for the moment, I'm going to pause and say, okay, people are going to be listening. They're going to be like, oh, this is interesting. Are you open to people getting in touch with you? What's the best way for them to understand a little bit more about your work that we haven't tried to cover today?
Yeah, for sure. Well, they can find me on LinkedIn, so under Leticia Gibson, or go to our website, which is timeforneways.com, or they can just email me directly at leticia@timeforneways.com. So yeah, really, I mean, this is a passionate topic of ours, and yeah, really open to having conversations, hearing about people's experiences. Yeah, it just feels really important to be talking about it and also learning from each other as to what's working, what's helping, and really kind of creating a community around how we, yeah, make this more the norm.
Yeah, that feels like a really good thing to want to try. Like, I know that we and a lot of our close sort of, we have listeners that we sort of speak to quite a lot. And I think there's an appetite for community working, even whether it's a formal or whether it's an informal conversation, there's a need and a want to try and share more together how we can do this better and how we can help other people do it better. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. So unfortunately, that brings us to the end. Thank you so much for your time, Letitia. It's been a real pleasure. And the reason I'm pausing is because I normally share like a reflection of my own of the conversation. And I kind of have all these things going on in my head about all the different ways this, the work that we've seen in people's experience. But I guess the one thing I would take is the, I guess, the kind gentleness with which you talk about trying to make change, that this is a journey and that the people can try this and learn and we can work together. And it's not some big switch that you're going to turn on and off and loads of investment. It's about making these small human connections and helping other people to prioritize those things. So yeah, that's been something that I definitely will take away. So thanks for staying with us, listeners, to the end. As always, you can find out more on our webpage about Letitia and the links that we've talked about on the podcast notes. Otherwise, it's a massive thank you from me and a goodbye. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Don't forget, as well as these podcasts, we deliver at least one free online seminar every month that everyone can attend. You can sign up for these and our newsletter, The Wow Mail, on our website, www.worldofwork.io. That's www.worldofwork.io.